It's the Matt Pavala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're celebrating our Star Wars geekdom tonight because May the 4th occurs this week, and I won't be on the air that day to celebrate with you. I'll be wearing Yoda ears somewhere in the world. But joining us on the phone right now to talk a little bit about Star Wars from a different angle, an interesting perspective, is Jason Eberle. He is the Semler Endowed Chair for Medical Ethics and Professor of Philosophy at Marion University in Indianapolis. How are you today, Professor Eberle?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us. I'm curious about this because when I read your bio and the things you've written about and ethics and different areas, and a lot of it in you know, you've written about Thomas Aquinas and bioethics and Catholicism and all sorts of things. When we get into science fiction, while we sometimes dismiss Star Wars and Star Trek and The Walking Dead and all sorts of things as cheesy pop culture, there are real things that we can look at. For example, we're going to talk Star Wars, but The Walking Dead is something that's on all the time right now. And I'm not as into as much the zombie killing stuff like that, but the interaction of what would you do if you were suddenly faced with situations like that. And Star Wars certainly has those moments of this pure good versus evil, but a lot of black and white in between, which I think kind of mirrors real life. How do you look at the Star Wars universe? Do you think this is just fun, or we can really take this seriously as a way to discuss choices we make and the human condition?
Yeah, there's a quote I love from Ray Bradbury, the famous science fiction writer, that, and I'm not sure if I got the exact quote, but it's along the gist of that science fiction is the last realm in our society where the philosopher can roam just as freely as he chooses. And I think part of the reason that quote resonates with me is that sci-fi and fantasy, pretty much the whole concept is what philosophers call thought experiments, what-if scenarios. And so, like you said, there's a lot of situations that we don't face in our everyday lives, and it's good to stop and reflect on, well, what if that happened? What if there was a zombie apocalypse, you know, in terms of The Walking Dead, where, you know, really, in that show, it's not about killing zombies. It's about the human relationship. It's about the attempt to, you know, construct a post-apocalyptic society and survive. And I think Star Wars, in a lot of ways, even though they're not dealing with an apocalyptic society, definitely throughout the saga, you have social disruption as a democratic republic turns itself into a tyrannical empire, and, you know, what sort of decisions motivated that. And then, of course, the individual choices of good versus evil. And as you said, some things are, you know, pretty clear black and white, but then others, there's a lot of gray area. One of my favorite examples, just to give one off the bat, Lando Calrissian. You know, you watch The Empire Strikes Back, and of course, you want to be, you're rooting for Han and Leia, right? They're our heroes with Chewie and 3PO. And so when Lando turns them over to Vader and the Stormtroopers, you're like, oh my God, he sucks. But then you stop and think about it. Okay, he's running this city. His responsibility is to his people. I mean, will we want the President of the United States to turn us over to for the sake of his friends, allow something bad to happen to the U.S.? No, the president needs to look at the welfare of the country, and Lando, at least he thought, was looking at the welfare of the citizens of Cloud City.
And he had a promise that they would not be hurt, right? I mean, we do learn all that, like when he's going to be frozen in carbonite, you said nothing would happen to him. Well, hopefully it won't. So he did think that it's not like he sent them off to be killed, right? He was making this trade for the good of his people and the charge he had. So I think we can defend him in that, definitely, in that he didn't think harm was going to come of them. Vader keeps changing the deal afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. Star Wars, though, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek are so different, right? Because Star Trek looks at the future as a really positive place. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars looks back, really, at the past, right? Because it's a long time ago, as a purely good or evil. You know, we talk about black and white, but in Star Wars, you know, there's black and white in the Lando Calrissian choice. But when it comes to the Force, it's very a you choose good or you choose evil message, isn't it?
It is very much so. So first of all, just to mark on, you know, one of the differences that you alluded to between Star Trek and Star Wars, you know, Star Trek is truly science fiction in the sense that it is trying to prognosticate towards what human future could be and where our current social values and science and technology could lead us. Whereas Star Wars is really a fairy tale in the end. It's a fantasy story. And but it's still, as a fantasy, like all good fantasies, like Lord of the Rings and so on, there's universal human elements that we can identify with respect to things like, you know, these moral choices. And so with the Force, of course, that's, again, the Force is not a sci-fi concept because it's not really based in science at all. But as a fantasy concept, Lucas specifically intended it to reflect all sorts of different spiritual and religious worldviews and different theologies. So, for example, in you know, the books I've done on Star Wars I've edited, they include essays written by, obviously, people coming out of the Western philosophical and religious traditions, but also articles from Eastern perspectives, and looking at the Force as both something that may be kind of like a personal deity, right? There's the will of the Force that gets talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Force is also kind of impersonal. It's generated by all living things, Yoda says. And that creates this complicated picture where, on the one hand, Star Wars does give us two definitive sides, the light side and the dark side. But, of course, a lot of people, you know, journey in between those realms. I mean, Luke himself definitely touches darkness when he faces Vader, really on both occasions, ultimately, though, you know, not succumbing. And I think in the new film with Kylo Ren, he talks about his own inner angst, and he feels the pull to the light even as he's trying to ally himself with the dark side.
With the Jedi, tell me what you think about the Jedi, because, you know, I haven't watched all the movies that closely recently, although I've seen them all many times. But it seems to me that the Jedi, the way it's set up, is sort of an impossible task. It's somewhat, I think, mirrors the way we're supposed to look at religion in our country, that there's this separation between church and state. The Jedi are there to provide peace and protection, but not to fight fights, not to take sides, things like that. But, you know, in our own land, that doesn't stay like that. And the Jedi ultimate downfall is probably that they won't get more involved to keep peace or choose the right side or wrong side. Do you think that the Jedi, you know, in theory and how it sort of was set up, I think, by George Lucas, could exist, could find ways to, you know, not be overtaken because they won't, you know, because they don't want to get it. They want to kind of be Switzerland, right?
Right. No, that's a great question. And I think whether intentionally or accidentally on Lucas and the other creative elements figures' parts, I think it very much the Jedi's role mirrors both historical developments and contemporary situation in terms of religion in relation to politics. You know, historically, the Jedi are really closest to sort of the samurai warriors in feudal Japan who lived by this code of Bushido, or other types of warrior monks like the Knights of Templar in the Christian realm. And you know, there's a combination of, again, spirituality and religion, but also the warrior ethic, and then getting involved in politics. And I think what a lot of, you know, our own history shows is that the less that religious figures become directly involved in politics, of course, influencing politics, you know, being moral witnesses and so on, that's one thing, but actually, you know, asserting power or aligning themselves too closely with one side or the other in political debates can really not only potentially disrupt the political process, it can even be damaging to the religious group's own identity. And I think the Jedi experienced that when they kind of fall in Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And I think it's a huge part of Luke's motivation to kind of leave and go off. You know, Episode 7 begins with Luke having vanished 10 years prior. No one knows where he is. He just unplugged. And, of course, Leia, his sister, is a Force sensitive, but she hasn't formally become a Jedi, yet she's this political figure. So there we have this, you know, separation continuing.
Do you think that, you know, if you were going to guess that Luke felt that because, you know, a Jedi turned against him and turned to the dark side, he felt maybe the universe is better off without these forces and people being trained in this way because it's too easy, and he had seen in his own life the power that you gain by turning to the dark side? Do you think it was just a, we're better off not doing this, and that's why he just fled?
That's a great question. I hadn't thought about it from that angle. On the one hand, that may very well be his perspective. On the other hand, it's kind of tough to hold that because, of course, the Force arises naturally. So it's not as if you can control the coming into existence of Force-sensitive people who have these powers. And that's why in the prequel trilogy, the Jedi actually went around the galaxy looking for these Force-sensitives and then taking them as children to train them to become Jedi, basically on the premise that, well, if someone's a Force-sensitive and they become really powerful in the Force, but we haven't trained them as Jedi, then they could be really dangerous to the galaxy. And so I think that was definitely the ethos of the prequel generation Jedi. And with Luke, yeah, I think it may very well be, he's like, at the very least, he's probably in a situation of, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. He may not finally decide it's not the right thing, but I think he's definitely trying to figure out where's the Force leading us.
That's very interesting. You know, I think of it, I don't think of the Force Awakening, meaning the Force is you know, I assume that for all these years, there have been all these people that have a high midichlorian count or whatever it is and just aren't being trained and are just, you know, very fast at things or unknowing why there's certain things. Like Rey, for example, clearly has Force sensitivity, right? I don't think the Force awakened because it's in her. I think, to me, the title The Force Awakens is Luke coming out of, even though that's the last scene, that's Luke coming back into and this rising up of the Force will start being used again. I assume it's always been there. It's always, you know, it's in everything we do, as Ben or Yoda have said in the past. But it awakens in this Rey waking it back up and Luke, them finding Luke and bringing her back. What do you want to see happen in the next movie?
Oh, man, I got a laundry list like any other fanboy. honestly, I love the picture that Mark Hamill tweeted from the first day of filming. I would love to see Luke riding on Rey's back the way Yoda rode on his back, right? if you've seen that picture going around the internet, it's hysterical. But I definitely would. Well, first of all, what I don't want to see is it just kind of be a remake of Empire Strikes Back.
Well, when you said that you'd love to see that, I was thinking, he should have tweeted, "Damn, we're making the same movie again."
Right, exactly. I do think thematically it should kind of be like Empire, only insofar as it does delve more deeply as a character study, kind of understanding a bit more of, you know, Rey's motivations and kind of, you know, just how she is psychologically developed, having been really abandoned on Jakku all those years ago and growing up without her family, not knowing really what her origins are. Also, you know, Finn's motivations as a stormtrooper, and maybe even a little bit more of his backstory about what led him up to his decision to lead the First Order. And I know that's all backwards looking stuff, but I think, you know, Abrams and company created a great set of characters with very good actors, very appealing actors playing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like with Luke Skywalker, needed that time on Dagobah to kind of discover really who he is and what his destiny is. I think thematically we should see some of that with Rey and the others as well.
Do you want to hazard a guess on Rey's lineage?
Yes. I'm kind of a fan of the Obi-Wan Kenobi granddaughter thesis. I'm also kind of interested in the theory that that her mother might be Jyn Erso from Rogue One, the new character being introduced there. Some people have quibbled about the timing, the age not being right for like her and Luke to have produced Rey, but I think it's certainly possible for that to have happened. Of course, you know, from the now non-canonical expanded universe, we know that when Luke did restart the Jedi Order in that timeline, he didn't adopt the Jedi's rule of celibacy, and of course he married Mara Jade, and they had their own son, Ben Skywalker. So I don't think Luke was feeling beholden to have to be a celibate Jedi monk.
Well, if Ben's got a granddaughter, then he certainly wouldn't have done that either. That'll be interesting to see. If that plays in, it's funny. I want to think she's Luke's daughter, but I'm trying to figure out then how, you know, because the whole being left with, who was she left with on Jakku? What was the character's name?
Unkar Plutt.
Okay. And that's the guy she's, you know, selling the stuff to every day, right?
Right. So she's not, enslaved by him, but she works for him.
Yeah, and she was kind of left in his care, and she's not being treated well, so you'd think if Luke's leaving her somewhere, he would have done a better job. But maybe Luke went into exile, and so the mothers thought, you know, this they'll come after her, we have to hide her somewhere. But you'd think, Leia got to go with, Admiral
Organa.
You know, they got to go somewhere a little better. I mean, even Luke got his uncle and aunt on a dirt farm. Rey's existence is pretty brutal compared to both of those. You'd think they would do a better job. So I hesitate to think that would be it. It's just very, very odd because it's not like she was truly placed in the care of somebody. She's really fending on her own. But it'll be fascinating to see how that turns out.
No, that's a good point. And of course, we don't really know who left her there.
Right.
We suspect, that Luke did after the destruction of the Jedi Temple, but we don't really know. Clearly, Kylo seems to know something about her existence because the First Order officer first reports to him that that BB-8 escaped in Millennium Falcon with a girl, he immediately reacted to that, right? So, he was already upset that FN-2187, Finn, had been involved. But when he hears this other girl involved on Jakku, he has this very violent reaction to that.
Oh, interesting. I never caught that.
And so it seems like he knows something that we don't. I'm not implying he's the one that left her there or anything, but I don't know. There's just something there that more backstory we need to get.
Well, we'll have to wait only a few more months for Rogue One and then another year or so right now for the next Star Wars Episode 8. In the meantime, you can check out a lot of the stuff that Professor Everall has written. He is the Semler Endowed Chair for Medical Ethics and the Professor of Philosophy at Marion University in Indianapolis. He was also the editor of a Star Wars book, several Star Wars books or just one Star Wars book. I know The Ultimate Star Wars and Philosophy, You Must Unlearn What You Have Learned. You're an editor there. Are there other Star Wars pieces of writing that we can find your name on?
Yeah, so the reason it has the title The Ultimate Star Wars and Philosophy is there was an earlier book called Star Wars and Philosophy, More Powerful Than You Can Possibly Imagine. And that book came out in 2005, just prior to the release of Episode 3.
Well, it's time for an update, isn't it?
Yep, it was definitely time. And plus, one of the other changes we made in the newer book is the first book stuck strictly to the films, whereas in this one, we had a lot of authors, myself included, who were writing about or otherwise citing a lot of the expanded universe stuff. And we also have an article in there justifying philosophically the continued canonicity of that material if the audience wants to consider it canonical.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, let's stay in touch and let's talk again around December when the next movie comes out, okay?
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.